Hello and welcome to Ox Talk for Tuesday, August 11th, 2026. I'm Andy, and as one of Ox Talk's technical officers, I'll be putting together this week's edition, compiled as always from news and articles from across the week, as published in the local papers. Ox Talk is available to listen online via the Ox Talk website and through your Alexa device. More details on how to do this will be given following this week's news stories. Sunrise times this week range from 5:43 to 5:52 in the morning, with sunset from 8:36 to 8:24 p.m. For this edition, the news has been chosen and read by Janet Proudman and Ralph Weirs.
An Oxfordshire MP has criticised Thames Water's response to the ongoing drought, saying it is incredibly insensitive. Freddie Van Mierlo, who represents Henley and Tame, has urged the company to prioritise fixing leaking infrastructure, which reportedly loses 2.87 billion litres of water daily. This comes after the Environment Agency declared the Thames Valley area in drought. The responsibility of maintaining water resources during a drought lies with water companies. Thames Water has already implemented a hosepipe ban in the area since July the 22nd. Chris Weston, speaking on the BBC's Big Boss Interview podcast, stated that some of the firm's targets were beyond what they could achieve. He said, "We have to hit a certain level of leakage, but it is so far in excess of what we are capable of doing. However much money you invested, that is not going to be achievable." Thames Water, the largest water company in the UK, has been under fire recently for its handling of sewage discharges and leaks. Last year, it was fined a record £122.7 million by regulator Ofwat, largely for breaching sewage spill rules. However, Mr. Van Mierlo argues that a network-wide hosepipe ban would save around 577 million litres a day. He said, "So although measures such as hosepipe bans are required during drought, it seems fixing leaking infrastructure would be a significantly more effective use of time." In your most recent interview with the BBC, you commented that targets to fix leakages are unrealistic. "This is incredibly insensitive, considering we are experiencing a 1-in-500-year drought event. After reviewing the company's existing drought plans, I am further concerned that the actions outlined in the early stages of drought are limited to awareness campaigns to reduce water use and hosepipe bans. Nowhere, even when drought progresses to severe, is there mention of emergency repairs to leaks in the system." He added that constituents have been contacting him daily about leaks due to Thames Water infrastructure and the lack of action following their reports. He said, "Not only do these leaks damage property, but now in a time of drought, Thames Water are washing away an essential resource. The company, serving 16 million customers in London and parts of southern England, treats 4.3 billion litres of waste daily." Mr. Weston mentioned that 99.5% of the time, the waste is treated successfully, although sometimes something goes wrong. He added that while the company wants to improve on pollution, the chances of getting to zero pollution are very, very slim. Plans for 95 homes in a village have been refused, despite planning officers recommending the development for approval. David Wilson Homes submitted the application to Charwell District Council for the homes on land next to Bloxham Recreation Ground, off South Newington Road, Bloxham, near Banbury. The development would have included 2, 3, 4, and 5-bed homes, with 35% classified as affordable, plus open space such as wildflower meadows and enhanced walking and cycling routes. When the plans were first submitted, the developer said the scheme would help meet Charwell's housing supply shortfall while delivering biodiversity improvements and new infrastructure for the village. However, councillors rejected the proposal, concluding that the development would be harmful to the landscape and open countryside and would be detrimental to the nearby Slade Nature Reserve. The council also raised concerns over a proposed 3-metre-wide shared cycleway, arguing it would require the removal of grass verges and vegetation, creating an urban appearance that would be out of keeping with the village's rural setting. A further concern was the scheme's conflict with the emerging Bloxham Neighbourhood Plan 2024-2042, which does not allocate the site for housing development.
A major transport project to re-establish a direct rail link between Oxford and Cambridge is being hailed as a catalyst for tourism. East-West Rail promises to connect key destinations through Oxfordshire, Bedfordshire and Cambridgeshire and is being described as a boost for tourism, business and the wider economy. By the year 2050, the line is expected to generate £6.7 billion annually for the region, increasing tourist numbers with easier access to visitor attractions in Oxford and Bicester. Leslie Wright, Head of Marketing and Partnership Services at Experience Oxfordshire, said, "It's been over 50 years since Oxford and the county has been connected from the east by rail, so we're really excited to hear about these developments. It will allow the towns of Bedford, Milton Keynes and Bicester to be connected into Oxford and the wider county, and of course the two university cities of Oxford and Cambridge to be connected. We're excited that East-West Rail will bring increased footfall into Oxford and Oxfordshire, supporting local visitor economy businesses and bringing growth into the region. A key attraction is the Universal United Kingdom Resort, located just outside Bedford, which is expected to be one of the UK's most visited destinations. East-West Rail intends to build a new station at Tewardby to serve both local residents and visitors to that resort. Other attractions along the route include Bicester Village, Bletchley Park, Stadium MK and the Bedford River Festival. John Dernin, Group Retail Director at Bicester Village, said, "East-West Rail is absolutely critical for us to be able to build on what we have already generated. We will be able to extend across the region, invite more guests and visitors to this region, which will not only build our own growth and economy, but I think will also help the region's growth and economy. The fully open route will link 5 major railway lines." Laura Townsend, deputy leader of Milton Keynes City Council, said, "East-West Rail and the proposed eastern entrance at Bletchley Station will make it much more accessible and easier for people visiting the area, and there are a number of reasons to visit. We are the home of Bletchley Park, home of the Codebreakers. We've got the MK Stadium, where there are often events, football games and music events, and the National Museum of Computing is also based in Bletchley. Oxford attracts 7 million visitors annually and contributes £780 million to the local economy."
Children can travel for free on a bus network this summer. Go Thames Valley, a network that includes Thames Travel, Oxford Bus Company, Carousel Buses and Pullums, will offer free travel to children between the ages of 5 and 15 throughout August as part of the government's Great British Summer Savings Campaign. The scheme runs from August the 1st to the 31st and aims to help families enjoy more affordable days out across Oxfordshire, Buckinghamshire, Berkshire, Gloucestershire and the Cotswolds. Luke Marion, Managing Director of Go Thames Valley, said, "We're delighted to be taking part in this scheme for children during the summer holidays, allowing families to get around for less. Families can travel sustainably and visit a range of places from charming villages to city breaks, while youngsters seeking some independence over the summer are able to travel safely across our network. The free travel offer excludes the airline and the Robin services." A recycling scheme has raised thousands for a hospice by giving families the chance to make a difference. Nearly £38,000 has been donated to Catherine House Hospice in North Oxfordshire over the past 18 months, thanks to recycled metals from cremations at North Oxfordshire Crematorium. The scheme is part of the Institute of Cemetery and Crematorium Management, ICCM, Metals Recycling Scheme, which recycles metals with family consent and donates proceeds to charity. Vanessa Moore, site manager at North Oxfordshire Crematorium, said, "We are incredibly proud to support Catherine House Hospice through our ICCM charity partnership, recognising it as our essential local charity. Most people don't realise that with a family's permission, metals recovered following cremation can be recycled to benefit charities supporting local communities. The most recent donation of £17,000 brings the total raised for the hospice to £37,982.
A farm which is pioneering environmentally friendly growing methods is being featured in a new book that explores how healthy soil leads to healthy people. Farm Ed, based in Honeydale Farm near Chipping Norton, is included in Soil to Gut, How to Regenerate Your Health with Food, written by Dr. Lucy Williamson and available from the end of July, so it's available now. The book explains how food choices and farming methods directly affect human and environmental health. Dr. Williamson said, "For every pound we spend on poor food, as much as £2.64 is spent on its hidden costs to our health, and that's before we consider the harm to nature and to our environment. What an opportunity we have in better food." Farm Ed is featured in the book as a real-world example of how regenerative farming can improve soil health and deliver wider benefits, including to human gut health. The farm is managed by Ian Wilkinson and operates as both a working farm and an educational centre, welcoming visitors from the public, policy and research sectors to learn about regenerative agriculture. Mr. Wilkinson said, "After decades in the agricultural sector, I become troubled by a worsening problem. Industrial monocultural crop farming is degrading soils. As a result, we have become ever more reliant on chemical inputs and are at the mercy of the global commodity markets. With input costs rising and the sale value of produce remaining stagnant, many farmers are struggling to operate at a profit. At FarmEd, we hope to unearth healthy solutions for the future." He described FarmEd's approach as starting with the soil, believing in the need for an alternative to conventional farming. Mr. Wilkinson said, "Often referred to as regenerative agriculture, it begins with rebuilding our soil fertility to levels where the soil can support food crops without massive chemical supplements. It develops further into the creation of a complex, resilient system where, as on the farms of old, different activities support one another in a codependent way." Dr. Williamson said, "Nature-positive farming all begins in the soil. Farming systems that restore soil, biodiversity and nutrient density aren't just good for nature, they're essential for our long-term health too."
Thames Valley Police has announced a new Assistant Chief Constable for Crime and Criminal Justice. Assistant Chief Constable Darren O'Callaghan brings 31 years of policing experience to the position. He joined Thames Valley Police from Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary in April. Mr. O'Callaghan said, "I am delighted to be taking up my new role, leading Crime and Criminal Justice for Thames Valley Police, and to have the opportunity to build on the great work here in the force. In the past few weeks, the force has been highlighted by HMICFRS as making significant improvements, but also highlights areas to work on. I am looking forward to the challenge of doing all I can to help Thames Valley Police become an excellent force trusted by all of our communities. He began his career as a police constable in Petersfield in 1994 and became a detective 3 years later. His experience covers professional standards, child protection, major crime, and intelligence. He was also district commander for Fareham and Gosport. He became director of intelligence in 2015 and head of intelligence, tasking and development as a chief superintendent in 2017. More recently, he worked with the Joint Operations Unit in 2022 before becoming Assistant Chief Constable. Mr. O'Callaghan said, "It will be a privilege to be working with our brilliant officers and staff."
Police forces across the UK, including Oxfordshire, are using a new smart tag technology spray as part of a crackdown on e-bikes, e-scooters and motorcycles. Smart tag, a traceable solution developed by Deterrtech UK, can be fired from a handheld canister over distances of up to 10 metres, coating riders, clothing and bikes with an invisible marker, which is only detectable under ultraviolet light. And it carries a unique forensic code linked to the specific canister used, allowing investigators to match a suspect to a particular incident weeks or even months later. In Southampton, Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary says the technology gives officers a safer tactical option when dealing with motorbikes, e-bikes and e-scooters being used in crime or antisocial behaviour, reducing the need for risky pursuits or close confrontation. The move comes amid growing complaints about riders using powered two-wheelers on pavements and in public spaces, and follows similar trials by Dorset Police and other forces to tag offenders rather than chasing them through busy streets. A BBC report in April said the Thames Valley Police is now deploying smart tag spray as part of its own response to the rising criminal use of e-bikes and e-scooters.
A 65-year-old cyclist has been killed in a horror crash with a car in the city, leading to hours of closures. Emergency services closed off Iffley Road last Tuesday night after reports of a crash between a cyclist and a Volkswagen Golf. The road remained closed throughout the following morning before police confirmed that a 65-year-old Oxford man had died at the scene. Now, a death by dangerous driving investigation has been launched and a 21-year-old man from Oxford has been arrested. He remained in police custody. The force said it had been called at 11:09 p.m. after the crash near the junction with Donington Bridge Road. But despite the best efforts of medical professionals, the injured man could not be saved. His family have been informed and are being supported by specially trained officers. The road reopened last Wednesday morning following several hours of investigative work. Police staff investigator Phil Hannam of the Serious Collision Investigation Unit said, "First and foremost, our thoughts are with the family and friends of the man who has sadly died. We recognise the devastating impact this loss will have on those closest to him, and we are ensuring they receive the support they need. We are appealing to anybody who witnessed the collision or who was travelling in the area at the time and may have dashcam footage to please come forward. Even the smallest piece of information may prove vital in helping us establish exactly what happened. The tragic incident has now sparked calls for better infrastructure in the area, with cyclists left saddened at the loss of one of their own." Ian Loder, chair of biking charity Cyclox, which aims to support more people to cycle safely in the city, said the group was saddened to hear of another death of a person on a bike. Mr. Loder said, "We extend our deep condolences to the victim's family and friends. One death of a person cycling is one too many. This incident underscores the vital need for safe cycling infrastructure. This junction, like other Oxford junctions, fails to provide for safe movements by people cycling. Cyclos has redesigns for the junctions available that will make it safe and ask that they are given urgent consideration. Oxfordshire County Council launched its Vision Zero strategy in 2022, a road safety approach which aims to reduce deaths and serious injuries on the county's roads to zero by 2050, with a 50% reduction by 2030. A spokesperson for the County Council said its thoughts are with the family and friends of the cyclist killed in this tragic incident, adding that the Council will await the findings of the police investigation. Robin Tucker, co-chair of the Coalition for Healthy Streets and Active Travel, COSAT, said, "I'm deeply saddened to hear of the man killed by a suspected dangerous driver. While routes like this have been made safer with lower speed limits, better cycle lanes and fewer hazards, the junctions are often still poor for safety, notably Donington Bridge Road Junction. If this was an air, sea or rail death, there would be a full inquiry and a plan to prevent it happening again. We will be looking to see what Thames Valley Police propose." A former Riverside industrial building has been redeveloped into a 121-room hotel and Oxford University Education Centre. The Said Business School of the University of Oxford has applied for a premises licence for its latest city redevelopment of Osney Power Station. The iconic building, just off the Botley Road by Osney Lock, served as a key electrical power plant until its closure in 1968, and plans were approved for its £60 million redevelopment in 2019. Work began in October 2021, and successive reopening dates have been pushed back by the business school beyond its original three-year construction timeline. The new building will be rebranded the University of Oxford's new Global Leadership Centre, a high-level business and leadership education centre. It will include a number of flexible teaching spaces, advanced audio-visual suites, leisure and dining facilities, and a 121-room hotel. A new premises licence described the centre as a 121-bedroom hotel with training rooms, conference facilities and dining rooms, whose principal use is for executive education residential programmes set in the local heritage asset building, which has undergone extensive but sympathetic development. Said Business School is seeking a premises licence so that it can provide alcoholic drinks for dining, pre- or post-conference refreshment, and a bar which will be open in the evenings. The centre would be open for residents and guests only, with no general access for the public, who would be able to consume alcohol across the premises in breakout areas and bedrooms. It will also feature a riverfront terrace named The Colonnade, which would serve drinks and close at 10 p.m. The old power station has been a distinctive landmark in West Oxford since it opened in 1892, as the city's first electrical plant. Plans have been in the works for more than a decade now, since May 2015, with a complex planning process undertaken to protect the building's historic fabric while making it fit for its modern new use and safe in its riverfront location. Project management firm Ridge said the complex multi-phase development has required inventive logistics and construction measures to accommodate things like flood defences, precise river wall repairs, and the protection of archaeological discoveries like medieval remains. The building retains features like its original brickwork, steel windows, and gantry cranes, with systems like a concealed rooftop air source heat pump integrated to meet zero carbon targets.
The countdown is on once again for the reopening of Oxford's Botley Road, with under 50 days to go until the big moment. If Network Rail can stick to its revised plans and not push the opening back a fifth time, it will mean that Botley Road has been shut for 1,258 days, having closed in April 2023. The UK and indeed the world has changed a lot since then, But one constant in the lives of Oxonians has been the closure of Botley Road. Most notably, this country has had three prime ministers since the Botley Road works started: Rishi Sunak, Keir Starmer, and now Andy Burnham. The world has seen major wars start in Gaza and the Sudan, as well as nearly 60 active conflicts worldwide since April 2023. Donald Trump, who was not in power when the Botley Road closed, claims to have stopped 10 global conflicts. Since mid-2023, the UK's population has grown by about 750,000. Botley Road's closure was announced on Twitter rather than on X. Back then, AI and ChatGPT was a niche back office technology. But it has since grown to become a staple in millions of lives. China has built or expanded approximately 9,300 miles of high-speed motorways since the end of 2023, while Network Rail builds a bridge. It is estimated by scientists that up to 6,000 new planets have been discovered in space since Botley Road was closed. But it's not just today's technological world that makes the Botley Road closure seem farcical. Our ancestors managed to complete much more in much less time. The Americans spent a third of that number of days to build the Empire State Building in New York City. At just 410 days, the Pentagon in Virginia took 491 days to complete. The Eiffel Tower in Paris was finished in 793 days. British Columbia was connected with Alaska 1,700 miles away in just 234 days, built rapidly by the US Army Corps of Engineers in 1942. Of course, not everything amazing, such as a bridge at Oxford Station, can be built in less than 1,258 days. It took the people of Dubai about 1,325 days to claim the tallest building in the world prize with the Burj Khalifa. Network Rail bosses now expect Botley Road to be back open on Sunday, September the 20th. This will be once the three gas leaks are fixed, having been discovered earlier this month. Tim Walden of Network Rail said he understands the significant impact caused by the closure and apologises for this. While there is still important work to complete, we now have a clear target for reopening the road, and our teams remain focused on delivering the remaining programmes safely and reopening Botley Road as soon as possible, he said.
A 56-week closure of a popular Oxford footpath has been delayed by more than 2 weeks, ahead of works starting for a major new bridge. Preparation works for the new Oxpens River Bridge are set to begin imminently in Grand Pont Nature Park, and a key footpath connecting North Hinckley to the city centre could close for more than a year to enable them to happen. Originally scheduled to shut on Monday, August the 3rd, the closure of the well-used path through Grand Pont Nature Park has now been pushed back to Monday, August the 17th, according to signage displayed on the route. On the other side of the river, the footpath through Oxpens Meadow was due to shut from Wednesday, July the 29th. Though an approved temporary traffic regulation order allows for a closure of up to 56 weeks, Oxford City Council said the paths are expected to reopen in spring 2027. The City Council earlier said that while it recognises the paths are used as a diversion during the long-running Botley Road closure, waiting until it reopened would delay the delivery of the bridge project.
An unused park and ride site has reached a new expensive milestone to maintain and secure the site, costing £70 million, at the cost of almost £10,000 a month. The Ensham 850 space facility on the A40 was completed in January 2024, but has remained closed because of no road access. Since the £70 million scheme was halted due to cost issues, the cost of maintaining and securing the empty car park has cost almost £10,000 a month, with the total bill now nearing £300,000. Councillor Liam Walker, leader of the Conservative group at Oxfordshire County Council, described this figure as a monument to Liberal Democrat failure. The park and ride car park, along with the wider A40 improvements, were originally intended to be delivered together with funding from separate central government funding pots. But exceptional inflationary pressures in 2022 meant the scheme could no longer be delivered within the available budget. Mr. Walker argues that the council has tried to hide behind the fact that it's taxpayers' money and questioned why the £300,000 wasn't directed to getting access built sooner so residents could use the facility, he said. The council will argue the security and maintenance funding is not coming from taxpayers and that the project was funded by government cash as well, so it's public money regardless. Instead, residents have been left with an expensive facility sitting empty behind locked gates while the costs continue to mount. Oxfordshire County Council argue that proceeding with completing the park and ride without a road has saved taxpayers millions of pounds in additional inflationary and construction costs. He said, the council therefore proceeded with the park and ride because it was fully funded, had all necessary approvals and was ready for construction. The costs of maintaining and securing the site are covered through the construction contract and does not come from the council. However, hope is on the horizon after the council has secured planning permission last month on a 4-mile stretch on the key route. It said the county council is pleased to have secured planning permission and is fully focused on delivering this important infrastructure project. Further information on delivering timescales will be provided in due course. The scheme, which will be delivered in phases with the initial step backed by £126 million of government funding, includes new bus lanes, improved junctions, upgraded pedestrian and cycle routes, and better crossings. However, a different council report last month warned that any further delays could see the approved £70 million budget exceeded. The improvements are expected to start shortly and would enable the opening of the park and ride facility, which is expected in 2027.
A major archaeological project has secured a funding boost to help protect ancient monuments along one of Britain's oldest routes. The historic Ridgeway project has been awarded £129,100 from Historic England's Regional Capacity Building Grant Programme to continue its work until May 1, 2028. Funding will allow the scheme, which supports hands-on conservation and community engagement along the historic Ridgeway National Trail, which passes through Oxfordshire, to expand its reach into Buckinghamshire for the first time. Otis Gilbert, Heritage at Risk Project Officer, said, "We are delighted to be able to offer this grant to continue the vital work on the nationally significant archaeology around the Ridgeway National Trail." He said, "It is an important way of working with local people, DEFRA and local authorities to support better management of the historic and national environment in England's most special places." The project will provide new opportunities for people to get involved in caring for archaeology near them. The project, supported by a team including a project manager and volunteer coordinator, undertakes conservation activities, public engagement, and volunteer-led heritage recording. Much of the hands-on work is delivered with the backing of landowners and an active network of volunteers, with funding for individual conservation schemes coming from project partners. Dan Bashford, project manager, said, "Every section of the Ridgeway National Trail has its own archaeological story to tell. Extending the project into Buckinghamshire will help us identify and record vulnerable heritage sites, improve our understanding of how people have used this landscape over thousands of years, and put practical conservation measures in place to protect them for the future." Until now, the project has focused on a 30-mile central stretch of the 87-mile Ridgeway Trail in Oxfordshire and West Berkshire. The new funding and territorial extension will allow the team to continue eastwards into Buckinghamshire, reaching as far as Whiteleaf Hill. At the heart of the historic Ridgeway project is the condition and stewardship of the trail's 47 scheduled monuments, all legally protected and of national importance. The scheme brings together landowners, volunteers, and heritage professionals to conserve and interpret these sites, improve access, and promote archaeological education and well-being through engagement with the historic environment. Other goals include identifying and improving the state of non-scheduled heritage sites along the Ridgeway.
A proposal for a 57-hectare solar farm has been refused amid fears for harm to a landscape which inspired one of Britain's most influential artists. South Oxfordshire District Council Planning Committee debated the proposal for a solar farm on land northwest of Newnham Courtney on Thursday, July the 30th. The committee heard how the facility would provide nearly 50 megawatts of energy during daylight hours, enough to power 13,000 homes annually. The permission sought was for 40 years. In a field next to the A4074, near the recently constructed Cowley Solar Farm. Now, Newnham Courtney Parish Council had repeatedly opposed the plans over cumulative harm to the landscape, with Cowley Solar Farm and substation, substantial harm to designated heritage assets, and community opposition. Speaking at the planning meeting, Chair of the Parish Council Mandy Rigaud said, "This site is not the difference between hitting net zero and missing it." She added, "Oxfordshire is not failing to pull its weight. It's already doing more than its share, and the same clean energy is being delivered elsewhere on a far bigger scale with far less harm." Ms. Rigaud suggested that over 40 years, the solar farm could prevent thousands from seeing and enjoying the landscapes that inspired the painter J.M.W. Turner, a romantic artist, the namesake of the Turner Prize, described by the Royal Academy as one of the stars of British art. Oxford University Professor of Conservation and the Historic Environment, Malcolm Ayres, said, "I'm fully aware of the urgent need to provide alternative sources of energy, but quite simply, this is the wrong location for a massive solar farm that would totally destroy what Walpole called one of the most beautiful landscapes in the world." A South Oxfordshire planning officer said, "Due to the continuous extent of development south of Oxford, including the allocated site of Grenoble Road, the solar farm and the location of this site, it is considered that this site is important in preventing urban sprawl from Oxford." She had recommended approval in a report ahead of the meeting. Councillors described feeling conflicted and feared being overruled by the Secretary of State and having to pay costs. Despite this, the councillors voting for refusal were 5 in number and 3 voted not to refuse, so the plan was refused.
The head of a bakery firm has said no jobs will be lost as the company streamlines. Fraser Jones, the director of Barefoot Oxford, has made clear that all its shops are staying open and there will be no job losses amid ongoing changes. This process has seen Barefoot Oxford Limited go into liquidation, with liquidators from JT Maxwell Limited appointed on July the 29th. a resolution to wind up the company was passed on the same day. Fraser Jones, director of Barefoot Oxford, said, "Simply a reorganisation and no changes to the business at all. All shops are staying open and no job losses. We are streamlining to the one company name of Barefoot Bakery, how we are best known. The business has three branches across Oxford in North Parade Avenue, Walton Street and Cowley Road, as well as one in Kidlington. It describes itself as a small artisan bakery." It added, "We started out making cakes from our kitchen at home and selling them on a market stall in Oxford. Since then, the business has grown from strength to strength."
Jeremy Clarkson has said that he won't get paid for his Cotswolds farm work, despite doing 20-hour working days. The Clarkson's Farm Star used his latest newspaper column to claim that during the summer he can work non-stop for up to 15 to 20 hours a day on Diddley Squat Farm and still not see a return on the crops he harvests. Mr. Clarkson bought the farm near Chipping Norton in 2008 and has been running it himself since 2019. He recently said it'd become impossible to make money from growing food and argued that even a successful harvest does not guarantee an income. Adding to this in his latest column for The Sun, the 66-year-old said farmers cannot plan summer holidays. "This is because it's impossible to know when the harvest will be, leaving them stuck at home while friends head abroad." Mr. Clarkson described the reality of long harvest days, saying he wakes up at 4 a.m. and will work non-stop for 15 to 20 hours at a stretch, adding that while it's hot and dirty out there, he finds the job an absolute joy. He added, "Thanks to the hot summer and this government's strange hatred of farmers, you don't actually get paid for the wheat and the barley you've harvested. I worked out this morning that it'd be cheaper to go on an expensive holiday." Last month, Mr. Clarkson said that he had left 200 acres of Diddley Squat bare because we know that if we planted it with wheat or barley, we would definitely make a loss. Marking 30 years of magic, Creation Theatre celebrates a landmark anniversary with the Summer of Shakespeare in Oxford. For three decades, Creation Theatre has been proving that some of the best theatre doesn't happen inside theatre buildings. Since its founding in 1996, the Oxford Company has transformed gardens, castles, bookshops, car factories and many other spaces into immersive theatrical worlds, building a reputation for bold, site-responsive productions that invite audience to see familiar places through fresh eyes. As Creation celebrates its 30th anniversary this summer, it returns to one of its greatest strengths, Shakespeare under the open sky. The milestone marks more than simply longevity. In a notoriously difficult industry, where many theatre companies have struggled to survive, Creation has become one of Oxford's defining cultural organisations, creating work that has entertained generations of local audiences while continually reinventing itself. Its origins were remarkably modest. Founder David Parish had no grand ambition to establish a theatre company. "I did not want to be a producer or to run a theatre company," he recalls. "I just wanted to act." While performing in an open-air production in Oxford after graduating from drama school, however, Parish found himself inspired to do exactly that. Dissatisfied with his experience of the company he was working for, he decided that he could build something better. "My motivation was literally an indignant desire to do a better job," he said. Those early years were, in Parrish's words, a mixture of agony and exhilaration. With little money, endless lessons to learn, and no guarantee of success, the fledgling company survived through determination, entrepreneurial thinking, and audiences who responded enthusiastically to the ambitious productions staged in unusual locations. That adventurous spirit remains at the heart of Creation today. Now led by the artistic director, Helen Eastman, the company continues to embrace the belief that theatre should be accessible, imaginative and welcoming. Rather than asking audiences to adapt to traditional theatre spaces, creation transforms spaces to serve as stories. Producing outdoor theatre in Britain inevitably brings its own challenges. Every summer arrives with an element of uncertainty, and weather can quickly become an unpredictable member of the cast. Parrish remembers the devastating floods of 2007 and 2008, which caused significant financial losses, but also the remarkable support that the company received from audiences, institutions and charities across Oxfordshire. That resilience has become part of creation's story, reinforced again during the pandemic, when the company gained international recognition for its pioneering interactive online productions. This year it has been all about the heat wave, and director Helen Eastman told us they've been working hard to keep audiences and actors cool, and of course, interval ice creams. This season pairs two of Shakespeare's most beloved comedies, A Midsummer Night's Dream and Twelfth Night, which are alternating throughout the summer. It's the same six actors in both productions, and there's a real pleasure in watching the actors reinvent themselves in their different roles. The return of A Midsummer Night's Dream following last year's acclaimed production brings audiences back into Shakespeare's enchanted woodland of quarrelling fairies, confused lovers and mischievous magic. Few plays lend themselves so naturally to outdoor performance, where the transition from daylight to dusk becomes part of the storytelling, and Puck can be cycling in the distance collecting flowers. Eastman told us that there have been a few bold creatures wandering into the performance already this season, with a fox finding its way on stage and a deer strolling through the site. Wolfe's and College is such a beautiful sight. It is really central in the city. But for the moment you step into it, you feel away, far away. The river, the trees, it's magical. Alongside it, Twelfth Night is a brand new production filled with mistaken identities, romance, music and comic misunderstanding. In creation's hands, it is full of laughter and silliness. Some extraordinary antics with strawberries and whipped cream, but also the agonising pangs of unrequited love. Eastman said, Twelfth Night is the pinnacle of Shakespeare's comedies. This year's performances take place under creation's specially designed open-air tent at Wolfson College's cricket ground, combining the atmosphere of outdoor theatre with welcome protection from Britain's famously unpredictable summers, shade from the sun and shelter from the rain. The shows are advertised for all ages from 5 to 105, and the season has been playing to audiences of all ages. Eastman commented, "We love how diverse our audiences are. Families, children, students, tourists, academics, summer schools, all coming together and experiencing a moment of community as they watch a story unfold together and laugh together."
Oxford has been named among the UK's most popular screen tourism hotspots for its use as a filming location for an iconic series. Filming locations in the UK are increasingly shaping where and how Britons choose to travel, with destinations featured in The Traitors, Bridgerton, Rivals and Clarkson's Farm inspiring domestic tourism. New research from Enterprise Mobility revealed 2 in 5 UK holidaymakers, 40%, have visited a destination after seeing it on the screen, a trend particularly fueled by younger generations, with the rate increasing to 58% among the 18 to 34 age group. It comes as a wave of new releases have recently boosted screen tourism, including the fourth season of Ted Lasso, released this week, set in Richmond. Enterprise Mobility's research highlighted that 1 in 8, 13%, of 18 to 34-year-olds said Ted Lasso would inspire them to visit its London filming locations. One of them is Stephanie Block from Seattle, who travelled to London to visit the show's real-life sets with a holiday itinerary built around the show. Ms. Block said, "We love how a real neighbourhood filming location allows us to experience a show firsthand. The idea of actually walking around where they filmed Ted Lasso was a highlight of our UK trip. Having a drink at the Crown and Anchor and strolling down the Richmond High Street felt like experiencing the magic of the show firsthand." As part of the research, Enterprise Mobility identified the UK's most iconic filming locations. London landmarks featured in the James Bond franchise and Alnwick Castle, made famous by the Harry Potter films, jointly topped the list, followed by Highclere Castle, Downton Abbey, Cornwall's coastline, Poldark, and the Scottish Highlands, the Traitors. Next on the list is Oxford locations, as the city was once the set of iconic detective drama series Inspector Morse. Author Colin Dexter put the city on the map as the UK's crime capital, with the series of novels he started writing in the 1970s, beginning with The Dead of Jericho. The Inspector Morse ITV series starring John Thor and Kevin Whateley followed, along with the sequels Lewis and Endeavour, the latter concluding in 2023. Some of the most popular tourist hotspots inspired by the series include the MacDonald Randolph Hotel on Beaumont Street, his famous favourite spot for whiskey and crosswords, plus the White Horse Pub on Broad Street, Exeter College, and the Oxford Canal.
In her regular article, Harking Back This Week, Emma Brennan recalls the bustling pitches of her youth, packed with characters, curiosities and bargains galore, in markets. She says, "I've written many times before about how the internet has changed so many facets of life, and not always for the better. The area that has been affected most notably is shopping, with estimates suggesting that around 30% of retail sales in the UK now occur online. Shoppers trawl the internet for everything from homeware to fashion, often seeking discounts. Many also order their weekly groceries via their mobile devices. It got me thinking back to when I was a youngster and the way we used to source reasonably priced products. I came to the conclusion that the local market was the destination of choice. Markets have a history in this country, dating back to before the Middle Ages, with records of market trading mentioned in the Domesday Book, 1086, the UK's oldest government survey document. And despite overwhelming competition from supermarkets and online retailers, many town markets have defied the odds and survived, even if the nature of what is being sold has evolved. Instead of cut-price fruit and veg, you're more likely to find farmers' markets with local producers peddling artisan food and drink alongside handmade crafts. Don't get me wrong, I am a frequent visitor to this type of event. But I do miss the kind of market stalls where you could buy all of those treasures you never knew you needed until you saw them. I'm thinking of those random pieces which you would now be more likely to find in a pound shop. When my mum was younger, working in the local town, she recalls market day as quite an event. She said it was a very busy time and brought a lot of trade into town. There were a number of stalls in the marketplace selling everything from fruit and veg to clothes and antiques. For me, a trip to the same market with my dad some 30 years later, palpable buzz was around as shoppers eagerly sought out the best buys, enticed by the loudest or most compelling cries of competing traders. Our trips were mainly to buy the fruit and veg that Dad couldn't grow at home and a bunch of flowers for Mum. But we also liked looking for gadgets on what Dad called the tat stall. But he also found useful things like a pair of pliers, batteries for the radio. As a teenager, I bought cheap clothes to wear at school. We didn't have school uniform at my school. But my school friends did the same. I wanted to be different, so I also bought dyes and dyed my clothes to customise them. Not that the markets in the 1970s and 80s were without their issues, though. For example, my dad swore, metaphorically and physically, that one particular fruit and veg seller would put good quality produce at the front and then fill your paper bag with inferior stock from behind the stall. This often resulted in a few mouldy strawberries or overripe cherries lurking at the bottom of the bag. Needless to say, he checked each purchase fastidiously before heading home. You also had to decipher what was being sold among a stream of constant sales pitches emanating from rival stallholders, all keen to entice a crowd to their wares. We laughed when one trader yelled, "Come and get your lovely ripe tomato!" And Dad would shout out, "Only one?" Nowadays, the chit-chat and banter is a welcome sound in a world where we are constantly subjected to white noise from our mobile devices. Another market recollection is of a trader who sold household items ranging from bedding to dressing gowns. This storeholder hosted live auctions for his products with discounts for bundles. Mum bought many a towel from his pitch, fighting off bids from like-minded savvy housewives on a limited budget. I remember the towel man, and his affectionately became known, going through an Oscar-worthy performance, giving his products the hard sell, while his glamorous assistant modelled the merchandise and collected the pound notes. As a fidgety child, I was quite bored remaining static while Mum haggled for bargains, but looking back, this is no different to the live auctions hosted on social media these days, albeit without the need to get into a physical tug-of-war on the end of a luxury bath towel. The towel man did well out of us over the years, offloading several psychedelic 1970s bedspreads, which added to the sensory overload in our vastly over-patterned bedrooms. Mum also bought some expensive-looking crockery from a neighbouring store, which she still has some 50 years on. Mum said, "The towel man never stopped talking, but he certainly had the sales patter and knew how to whip up a crowd. It was quite exciting getting into a bidding war, where you could look your opponents in the eye, unlike online auction platforms."
A comic sequel to Charles Dickens' classic is promising festive laughs with a serious message. A Christmas Carol Continues will run at the Old Fire Station in Oxford from December the 9th to the 29th. Written by Johnny Donoghue and Connor O'Toole, the play takes place 7 years after Ebenezer Scrooge's ghostly transformation. Mr. Donoghue said, "It is a great joy to return to the Old Fire Station, to engage with questions of housing and renters' rights in Oxford and beyond, and to imagine what might have unfolded had Charles ever met Karl Marx. Now a reformed man but still a landlord and moneylender, Scrooge is once again confronted by familiar spirits. They return to show him the lasting consequences of his social position and the impact he continues to have on those around him." The production draws clear parallels between Victorian housing struggles and today's housing crisis, offering both humour and social commentary. The Old Fire Station's in-house Christmas production takes inspiration from its close partnership with homelessness charity Crisis, with whom it shares its building. It is known for staging thought-provoking festive productions that explore themes of hardship and isolation. Previews will take place on December the 9th and 10th, with evening performances running Tuesday to Sunday from 7:30 p.m. Matinee shows are scheduled throughout the run, including on December the 12th, 13th, 17th, 19th, 23rd, 24th and 26th. Tickets are priced from £15 to £30 and can be booked through oldfirestation.org.uk.
A couple's self-made boat started on a Thames adventure. Rosie Blades and Michael Bailey, who met less than a year ago, set off from Lechlade with the hope of finishing at the Thames estuary in about a week. The boat, named the Floating Fun Quest, passed through Oxford at the weekend before carrying on through southern Oxfordshire and on to Wallingford and Henley. Mr. Bailey has previously rowed the Thames in a solo boat built by his father and has always dreamed of building a larger shared vessel. Mr. Blaze said, "Building the boat has become just as much a part of the adventure as rowing it. It's been an opportunity to challenge ourselves, learn completely new skills, and create something with our own hands that will carry us on future expeditions." The duo began the project in December, building the vessel as a personal challenge and a way to raise awareness for environmental charities, including Thames 21 and Surfers Against Sewage. Thames 21 works to restore and protect rivers through hands-on conservation, data collection and public engagement. Surfers Against Sewage campaigns for clean oceans and water quality, bringing pollution issues into national focus. The pair completed most of the work themselves with support from friends, family and the wider community, relying on second-hand tools and repurposed materials. "It's quite special," Mr. Blaze said. "We'll be launching the boat we designed and built ourselves together just days before the first anniversary of meeting each other. That makes the launch feel even more meaningful." The pair hope that their journey will encourage others to care for the river and support environmental action. Mr. Blaze said, "If our story encourages even a handful of people to spend more time enjoying and looking after the Thames, we'll feel the expedition has achieved something meaningful." Their time on the water is being shared online through videos and social media. And their schedule allows for community engagement at each stop. This includes riverside presentations and boat tours, where they will talk about the build and the importance of river stewardship. After months of building, the couple said setting off from Lechlade was a deeply emotional moment. They said, "More than anything, we will feel incredibly proud, not just because we've built a boat, but because we proved to ourselves that ambitious ideas really can become reality, if you're willing to learn, work hard, and keep going." Launch day didn't feel like the end of the project. It felt like the beginning. This expedition is the first chapter of a lifetime of adventures together.
A new specialty sports shop has opened in an Oxford shopping centre, with the owner bringing his passion for the game of darts to the business. New store Dartsmart set up shop in Unit 14 of Templars Square Shopping Centre, Cowley, with a grand opening event on Saturday, August the 1st. The small family-run business has been launched by Dwayne Jackson, an avid player who wanted to create Oxfordshire's new home of darts. He is supported by his wife, Jay, who helped set up the store while on maternity leave with their 9-month-old son, from her job as a personal assistant. Mr. Jackson said, "I have a passion for darts and I play regularly in the local Oxford leagues, but I noticed I needed to travel out of Oxford for accessories or order online with delivery costs and longer wait times. So I wanted to bring an accessible dart shop central to Oxford and surrounding towns to fulfil the needs of local dart players." Dartsmart sells premium equipment and accessories for all levels, for beginners to professionals, stocking major brands. It also offers a trade discount for pubs, clubs and league venues to support the sport the owner loves so much, and has 2 dedicated ockies so customers can try before they buy. A former Oxford United and Wales striker, Dean Saunders, has detailed the key advantage that Aaron Ramsey possesses ahead of the 2026-27 League One season. The Ewes head into the new campaign under former Arsenal and Wales icon Ramsey, who was appointed to his first permanent head coach role in June, replacing Matt Bloomfield at Oxford. "It has been an eventful summer in OX4, with the club being hit with a temporary transfer embargo in early July, throwing a spanner in the works fresh into the 35-year-old's tenure. United returned to the third tier after 2 years in the Championship, as they were unfortunately relegated last season alongside Leicester City and Sheffield Wednesday, finishing 22nd. Former Yellows centre-forward Saunders, who played 52 times for the club and scored 20 goals, is positive about Ramsey's chances with the embargo hit Ewes. It's not an ideal situation for Ramsey having a transfer embargo in his first permanent managerial role, he said, but it will certainly test his character, which is good for a young manager. He's a great lad, Aaron, one of the best in Welsh football, and he had a fantastic playing career. One of his best traits is being a born winner. He has a big winning streak in him, and he'll invest that straight into Oxford from the get-go. He has experience of playing football at the highest level. The players should be looking to learn as much from him as possible, and I'm sure he will learn from managing them as well. Oxford and Ramsey both seem committed to keeping as much of the current squad as possible over the summer, which is certainly a positive sign for him. The majority of those players are Championship standard, so I'd expect Aaron to still get a lot out of them in League One, even if he can't sign any of his own players. Aaron has never experienced a transfer window as a manager before, which I think is another advantage for both him and Oxford, the former Yellows goal scorer said, courtesy of live football tickets. If they had hired a more experienced manager who was set on bringing in certain players or desperate to uproot the squad and then was unable to do so, that could have created problems. However, Aaron is a fantastic character and I can't imagine he's letting it affect him too much. He'll be focused on building a winning formula with the players he has at his disposal, as that's the cards he's been dealt.
And that was the last of our articles for this week's edition of Ox Talk. If you have any comments or feedback, we now have a new landline number you can call. The number is 01865 377 635. That's 01865 377 635. Please leave a message for Michelle, Oxtalk's listener coordinator, remembering to leave your name and a contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from the previous 4 weeks are available on our website. Visit www.oxtalk.org.uk to listen directly or download the audio files. The current edition is also available on Alexa using the Talking Newspapers skill. Instructions on how to do this will be coming up shortly. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week for more news, so until then, we hope you have a good week.
Notice to listeners of Oxtalk who may wish to use an Alexa smart speaker to access our service. To listen to Oxtalk on an Alexa device, you can use the Talking Newspaper skill. You will need to first enable the skill. To do this, simply say, "Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper." Then, to listen to Oxtalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have any problems listening to Oxtalk using an Alexa device, It could be due to the way that your device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set it up in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact OxTalk and we will try to help.